This podcast was recorded at Hartford Street Zen Center, Isanji, in San Francisco. Please help support our temple by making a donation at hszc.org.
The other day, I saw an interesting exchange on Facebook, of all places. Someone was, I forget, either maybe injured or sick, and someone else was offering the, I guess you'd say, meditation along the lines of there is pain, but I am not my pain. There is sickness, but I am not the sickness. So, if you spent much time in California, you've probably run across that before. And for Buddhists, it's a kind of an interesting, a bit of a puzzle. Because one way of looking at it is that there's someone who is free of these adventitious afflictions. And then the question comes up, well, who is that someone? Because of our karma, the tendency would be, I think, to kind of conjure another person who it's us, but doesn't have these afflictions. Does that sound familiar? Anybody never heard this before? So Buddha, of course, taught that pretty much anything we can call the self is a projection onto phenomena that are inherently without self. That is, without fixed status as an entity. So, one of my Facebook friends in this thread asked me what I thought about that. This meditation. There is pain, but I am not my pain. And I said, something I remembered from the Book of Serenity, which was a ball thrown onto swiftly flowing water. the instant the ball hits the water, it's gone. My concern was that other people involved in this exchange wouldn't get caught in the trap of, I don't know, looking for this sort of angelic, permanently healthy critter in there somewhere. And as I say, that is our tendency. Because of the karma of self-clinging, which is pretty powerful. Came to mind a lot this past week, where I was not feeling well at all, and felt that the tendency to get over-identified with the discomfort. And this little meditation thing is designed to blunt that effect, so it may be helpful in that respect. But then the question is, then what? The same issue that comes up in one of the famous stories in the Book of Serenity, where our great ancestor Dongshan is not well, and one of his monastics comes to see him and says, Are you unwell, teacher? And he says, yes, I am unwell. And this monastic has something on the ball, so he says, well, is there one who is not unwell? And Dongshan says, yes, there is. And the monastic says, so does he take care of you? And Dongshan says, oh no, I have the opportunity to take care of him. And the monastic says, well, how is it when you take care of him? And Dongshan says, then I don't see any sickness. So there too, there's maybe a little bit of a temptation to find somebody else who feels better that you can be. But in the Buddha way, there is no such person. So, to whom was Dongshan referring? I don't know if maybe you hear a story like that. I don't know if you maybe feel a little shift in you somewhere. I have a friend who has a t-shirt that says, "Shift happens." And it's true. These are what I call our Zen campfire tales are magical in the way that they provoke this little shift. And sometimes people are too impatient to notice that. And so there aren't a lot of you here this morning, and some of the people who used to be here, they would get upset if I told a campfire tale. And I had the feeling they were being very impatient with this subtle magic encoded in these stories. So, who was Dongshan speaking of? The one who has no perceptible sickness. The instant the ball touches the water, it's gone. A number of our campfire tales concern an adept or a person of the way who is dying. And when that's what is transpiring, it's the karma of our attachment is apt to be very strong. So the story goes that Dongshan himself, when he came to die, according to these stories, some of them anyway, the teacher, the adept, would cross his or her legs and pass away while sitting. Dogen says, if you may recall, dying while either sitting or standing depends upon the strength of Zazen. Some people, I think, interpret that to mean if your Zazen is strong enough, you can do these remarkable things. But I don't think that's what he means. He means the strength that Zazen is. is responsible for such manifestations. Anyway, Dongshan shaved his head and bathed and sat down and passed away. And right away, his monastics all started wailing and carrying on. So he opened his eyes and said, "Okay, now we're going to have a stupidity feast." So he arranged to have a big feast for the monks because of their stupidity. And he hung around another 7 days. And then, indeed, he passed away. Presumably, this time there was less carrying on. The thing is, that ball that gets thrown in the water, we really don't want to let that go. Even though there's no way to hang on to it or get it back, we really don't want that ball to disappear. And since disappearing is what's always happening, we suffer. So in this story, there are a number of images that might feel a little bleak to us. Longzhi's poem on this story has the line, "When the meadow streams are thin, the autumn waters recede. When the white clouds stop, the old mountains are cold." So, this sort of, wintry images may seem, as I say, bleak to us, but they are conjurations of non-attachment. And just to remind us, non-attachment is not something we achieve, but something we practice. Our recently ordained priest, Reverend Hokai, has a beautiful new koromo robe with kind of long sleeves, and one of the things you get used to is catching sleeves on things, shutting them in doors, stepping on them, and so forth. And you get to be very sensitive to even a little tug on your sleeve, alerting you to the fact that something is caught. And in the practice of non-attachment also, we get very sensitive to the tug that attachment creates and the attendant suffering. So we, like, oh, I feel that tug, that means I'm chasing after the ball. Another famous exchange. A monastic asked Xiangyan, "What is the way?" And he said, "A dragon singing in a dead tree." The monastic said, I don't understand that." Xiangyan said, "Eyes in a dry skull." Again, I don't know, maybe a little bleak. So later on, somebody asked another luminary, Shishuang, and said, "What is a dragon singing in a dead tree?" Shishuang said, "There's still joy." And then he asked him, "Well, what are eyes in a dried skull?" Shishuang said, "There's still consciousness." These are, among other things, reminders that the water is constantly flowing. And things are constantly disappearing. And yet, there's what Suzuki Roshi called the joy in our practice that arises naturally, not dependent on any particular thing. And of course, as soon as it arises, there's the ball. And it's actually the same with pain. But the biology of pain is such that it can continue as a kind of melody. For quite a while. And if it does so, the tendency gets ever stronger for our attachment to manifest. In that case, it would be kind of negative attachment, trying to constantly be rid of something. So the willingness or the intention to be still as the water is constantly carrying everything away manifests in our practice. And with that kind of cultivation, we can loosely speaking, become acquainted with the one who is not sick. What ancestor Chouteau called the undying one in the hermitage. In his one of his poems, he makes that interesting remark. If you want to know the undying one in the hermitage, how could it be separate from this skin bag right now? This whole body mind is flowing water. And if we want to do the meditation, such as, well, there is pain, but I am not my pain. It's okay, but then we should remember the body-mind is flowing water. It's also important to look after this body mind. So if we're ill or injured, we should take care. In so doing, make sure to stay acquainted with water. It's constantly flowing. That way, the power of Zazen might sustain us so that we can pass away standing or sitting. Maybe this is all too confusing. If so, I invite you to ask a question.
miss the bus. There's another one coming.
Are you speaking of the municipal railway?
I'm more speaking about, so what's interesting to me is that you mentioned the practice of non-attachment. I thought, can we actually practice non-attachment? Because the water's going, the ball's going, the ball moves, and there's another ball.
Mm-hmm.
But maybe we could practice non-grasping.
Yeah, it's the same thing, basically.
Okay,
yeah.
But because ultimately we can't even attach. Is that,
no.
Yeah, so,
you're right.
Or maybe we can't even grasp, but we can see where.
Nope.
Oh, we missed that bus. So that's why that occurred in my mind, was like, oh, there's another one coming in. Or there should
yes.
be. There should be, not always around here.
Yeah. Grasping and clinging and attachment, those are all much the same.
Okay.
And the nature of reality is such that there's nothing to hang on to. Yes.
I mean, it sounds kind of stupid, but feels like the joy that arises naturally in practice seems to help take care of the pain that arises in your life too. And that,
yeah. Could you talk a little louder?
Yeah. I don't know. Maybe in arising naturally in practice, it's as opposed to the kind of joy that you're trying to grasp, I guess. I don't know. But I don't know. I just feel it seems to me like the one helps with the other.
Yeah, the joy that arises naturally in practice is a bit of a analgesic something.
Yeah.
It may not, banish dukkha, but it sure changes the mix.
Yeah.
I'm just thinking, why the tendency to grasp and attach? Why is it that we all are in the situation where we have that tendency to grasp and attach,
mm-hmm.
but yet we would be much better off due to our situation if we just didn't have that tendency in the first place? And so it seems like an imbalance or a sickness that we would have that.
Well, Buddha is sometimes called the great doctor for that reason. But if we didn't have this tendency, we wouldn't be here at all.
We wouldn't even be here in the first
place. We would not be here in the first place.
Right.
Now that we're here, how do we take care of that? That's our kind of practice question. And so much of Buddha's teaching is so simple. You know, basic formula is, are you suffering? What are you attached to? Just look, it's like, okay, my sleeve is not coming with me. Oh, look, it's shut in the door. Or somebody stole my wallet and I feel really bad now. It's like, I guess that's what they call attachment. And this mechanism, this dynamic is working all the time, which means we have numberless opportunities to see it in action and to prove for ourselves that Buddha was right on. Yeah.
In this society, we have to make money. So how do we deal with that and not being attached to anything? Like our education or our job?
Yeah. Well,
we're still struggling with that.
This society makes it especially difficult. Last night I was fumbling around in my closet and I realized I was feeling kind of poor. And I also realized, actually, I was feeling kind of poor, but I actually had enough.
What if you don't have a roof over your head?
That's a problem. And in this society, it seems to be okay if a bunch of people have no roof over their heads. Why that is worth a lot of, so to speak, soul searching. There's no reason on earth that everyone cannot have a place to live, food to eat, and clothes to wear. There is no reason except greed. So for me to be able to say, I have enough, is profoundly, feels like a gift. And if somehow that were the, I don't know what, the shared social vision, to have enough is okay, that's plenty, then we wouldn't have these problems of people with nowhere to sleep and nothing to eat. Yes?
Are you saying that this need, referring back to previous topic, are you saying that this need to attach is just innate in us being born and being mammals or primates? And that's how we reproduce.
Yes.
And that we don't, that it isn't best in our best interest to continue doing that once our survival is established.
I'm not sure if I followed entirely, but
in terms of attaching,
yeah,
this tendency to want to attach is because we were born that way.
Well, we're born that way because of the tendency to attach, according to Buddha's viewpoint. It is attachment that results in this body-mind. Hmm. You know the 12-fold chain of dependent cord origination?
I've heard of this, but you feel free to.
The first, traditionally anyway, the first link is ignorance, which means ignorance of the fact that it's all just water moving and moving and moving. And once that is established, everything else follows from that until you're a person in a world. You're born, you get sick, you get old, and you die. And it starts all over again. So Buddha said, you know what? Let's interrupt that chain. Let's find out what link we can break. And once you break one link, it's all broken. So in Zen, they kind of tend to aim at link number one, ignorance, avidya. But there's other ways to do it. And we have that beautiful Wheel of Life painting in the living room up there. And the outermost, the rim of the wheel is the 12-fold chain in little pictures. Mm-hmm. So it's a pretty powerful teaching. Yes?
I just want to echo on what you said.
Uh-huh.
Kind of make me funny.
Uh-huh.
That, are we practicing not to be born again, essentially?
Kind of.
Then I know it's a bit funny that, you know, they're saying human life's the most precious.
Mm-hmm.
Life is wonderful.
Well,
but they're like serious, huge conceptual differences.
Well,
versus everyone else.
Human life is precious because it becomes possible to break the chain.
Mm-hmm.
When one achieves human life. That's what's precious about it.
Mm-hmm.
According to Buddha, anyway. And is there joy in life? Sure. That's another ball thrown on the water. So, once we're here, we can count on joy and sorrow and sickness and health and so on. And that will keep happening until the chain is broken. That's Buddhism anyway. But of course, Buddhism also says, and you can do that in this very life. that can happen. Of course, if you're a bodhisattva, then you say, well, I don't care that I could leave now. I'm going to come back because so many others are not happy and they're still stuck. So I'm going to keep coming back until there's no one left. This is the bodhisattva vow. Yes? Pardon me, I have to get out of my torture pose here. Sorry, go ahead.
I wanted to go back to your original statement of I have pain, I am not the pain.
Right.
Is the converse equally as problematic? I am the pain?
Yes, because that's another kind of attachment.
No,
that's another attachment. There is pain, and I'm the pain, and that's all there is, and that's all there will ever be, and it's horrible. And this is the unfolding of attachment again. So, in a manner of speaking, the practice of Zazen is gently shifting our attention to the water, which is constantly moving. And even the experience of pain, I think most people would say, you know, some people, you know, it looks like this, just this, you know, an iron bar that's 10,000 miles long. But actually, it's not like that. Pain comes and goes and is up and down and right and left and backwards and forwards. And to the extent that we can actually pay attention to how the water is flowing, that will change our experience. So my only concern was that little meditation, people don't start postulating, you know, another me that just isn't feeling poorly. Like, well, I also said, though, in that Facebook exchange, well, whatever gets you through the night is fine. So there's that, too.
I would just like to clarify what you mean by the flowing water. It's a metaphor or symbolic of just the constant change in this temporal world that we're identifying with.
Is you could
that
say
what
that.
You're referring to?
Or you could say water. Yeah.
To pick up where Jim's question was, it seems like that you could say when you're having some discomfiture of some sort, that I am nothing but mm-hmm. this discomfiture. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessary. You could be attached to it. You can definitely be attached mm-hmm. to your own suffering. Mm-hmm. But that's not what I'm talking about. What I'm talking about is just being present with what's going on mm-hmm. right now. And as you said, pain is not an iron bar. It does. You, we all know, right?
Yes.
Anybody that's had a headache for more than a half an hour knows that it is not the same from moment to moment.
Right.
It changes. You may not like any of it, but...
Right. Well, so this is Dongshan again saying, when it's cold, the cold kills you. That's what he means. Whole universe is cold. Or when it's hot, the heat kills you. Whole universe is hot. That's where it's happening. So, yeah.
I just wanted to thank you for mentioning joy today.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, it's nice.
It's nice to throw that in there.